Welcome to Medicus, a student-run podcast about any and all things in the world of medicine. Follow along as we interview outstanding individuals about important topics in healthcare. Hi, I'm Emily. Welcome back to another episode of Medicus. Today, I will be talking to our two guests regarding the residency couples match. Before we begin, I would first like to explain to our listeners who may not know what is the couples match. So, as stated on the NRMP website, participating in an NRMP match as a couple allows two applicants to link their rank order lists, usually for the purposes of obtaining positions in the same geographic location. When applicants participate in a match as a couple, their rank order lists form pairs of program choices that are considered by the matching algorithm. A couple will match to the most preferred pair of programs on both of their rank order lists, where each partner has been offered a position. So today, I am excited to be speaking with Hannah O'Hagan and Adam Cardoni, who are both M4s at Loyola, who recently matched both into internal medicine at the University of Chicago through the residency couples match. So thank you both, Hannah and Adam, for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having us here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Of course. I thought this was a very important topic to cover for our listeners in the realm of applying a residency with our other residency-related interviews. So thanks for filling this gap.
Yeah, happy to do so. I totally agree. I think couples matching can seem really intimidating, and I know we learned a lot about it in the process, so we're happy to share our experience.
Awesome. So to set the context and stage for our listeners, I think it would be helpful and fun to learn about your story as a couple. How and when did you both meet?
Yeah, so Adam and I met during medical school, M2 year. We actually met probably for the first time at this M2, M1 mixer that we had at the beach. It was just a social event. And since we started as a COVID class, we were completely virtual first year. And second year is when we actually met a lot of people in person. So that's when we met for the first time.
Yeah, we met at that at the mixer on the beach. Hannah was very friendly to me because I had not really met that many people during our COVID year. So she immediately invited us into or invited me into her little friend group. She's very welcoming. And then we went on a trip maybe 4 or 5 months later where we drove to northern Michigan and we had about 6 hours in the car together. And when you have that amount of time, I think it's hard not to get to know someone. So we went into the car trip, I think, being, you know, close to strangers, and then got out basically dating.
Wow. It's interesting how COVID had impacted relationships, both friendships and romantic relationships. I'm glad that you were both still able to find each other despite those social challenges in med school.
Yeah, me too.
For some couples, it's a no-brainer to go through with the couples match, such as the couple who is married or engaged. However, for other couples, it's less obvious of a decision, less clear. Say the couple who started dating during medical school, like yourselves, or even the latter part of medical school for that matter. And not all medical student couples may decide to participate in the couples match for a variety of reasons, encompassing both personal and professional reasons. Can you please explain your decision-making process regarding participating in the couples match?
Yeah, definitely. I think that the most important thing to understand about deciding to couples match is that it's an ongoing conversation and an ongoing decision. So it's always kind of, I feel like, lurking in the back of your mind when you are a couple in medical school, that is something that you're going to have to consider and decide upon towards the end of your training. And so we definitely started the conversation early. I'd say around this time last year, so like spring of last year, we had been dating for about a year at that point. And that's pretty much when we started talking about, like, okay, are we going to couples match? Like, what do you want to, I mean, well, first we had to decide what we wanted to go into as individuals, right? And I've always been interested in internal medicine, geriatrics specifically, but for Adam, he was still trying to decide between surgery and internal medicine at this point. So at first it was kind of like, okay, he needs to decide what he wants to do. And then once he decides, we need to decide what we're going to do as a couple. But it was definitely an ongoing conversation that started in about, you know, the spring of our M3 year. And it continued all the way up until the point that we actually submitted our rank order list. Because obviously things change. When we started talking about it, we were only a year into dating, and now we're a solid 2.5 years into dating, and our relationship has, you know, grown in a lot of ways. Also, you know, when you start talking about it, you're not really sure exactly where you want to go and what you want to do. And as those things become more of a reality, you start interviewing places, your partner starts interviewing places, things can, you know, either overlap or things can not overlap. And sometimes that poses challenges. And so you have to make a decision if you're going to mark the couple status on your ERAS application that you submit in September, but that is not a binding agreement. So you can mark that. And the advantage of marking that is that that way programs, when they see your application, they realize your couple's matching. And especially if you're in the same program, like Adam and I are both internal medicine, they can just review both of your applications at the same time. But it definitely, if you mark that or if you don't mark that, doesn't matter either way. You don't have to couples match if you mark that. And you can always couple later, even if you don't mark that. So that's kind of like the first decision, and that's in September. And then the second decision, besides all of the times you're deciding whether you're going to email programs and what you're going to do throughout the interview trail, the second that is a binding decision is coupling on the NRMP website. Because like you explained so eloquently at the beginning, if you are a part of a couple, you submit one rank order list together, and each, instead of ranking individual programs, you rank combinations of programs. And so you pay a coupling fee and you have to like request each other, and then you lock into it. And that is a binding decision. I'm pretty sure you can still uncouple, but like you can't get your money back. So that's like pretty much where it's binding. And then when you submit your rank order list, that's when it's a binding decision. So you can really decide, you know, either way, all the way up to that point, which is the end of February. And so it was an ongoing conversation for us. And I definitely think it should be for all couples, because things change and you definitely don't want to regret that decision. It's a very important decision. So you should continue talking about it. But for us, I think we just became more sure of it as time went on, that our number one residency was going to be the residency where we could be together. So it definitely was an ongoing decision. But in terms of, you know, other specific factors, do you have anything else to add, Adam?
No. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head when you kind of alluded to the fact that it's a ongoing process. You know, there, it's not really, you don't have to decide definitively in September on your ERAS application when you mark that you're going to be, you know, part of a couple. That's not the final and, you know, end all be all that you are going to be participating in the couples match. You know, for people like us who had really at that point only been dating about a year, a little bit over a year, you know, and things are going well and you know, you're happy in that relationship. You know, I think the kind of the thought process for us at least was, we're happy. We have similar goals in terms of what we want to do. We both are interested in internal medicine. At that time, I was still interested in general surgery. We kind of also have similar preferences of where we want to be in the country. You know, there wasn't some massive discrepancy where I needed to be in New York and she needed to be in, you know, LA or something like that. And so just having those conversations about, you know, what our goals were, where we're going, were important. And then, you know, apart from that, I think it's just having, I think this is a part of any relationship, you know, a person is in, not just people in medical school, but you know, how committed you are to each other in some degree. You know, is this a serious relationship? You know, where are we, you know, what are our goals, you know, for our relationship, not just for our medical career. And it's an ongoing thing. Yeah. So, you know, from the time you submit it in September on ERAS that, you know, you are going to be, you know, in, you know, submitting your applications as a couple, you know, we continue to have those conversations about, you know, where do we see ourselves in 5 years? What, you know, what are our professional goals? Where do we want to be? All those things I kind of mentioned. And it just, you know, we were lucky enough that we, you know, continued to express commitment to each other. And
our personal and professional ambitions overlapped so well. Like you mentioned, we're both from Chicagoland area. Our family's here. We really wanted to stay around here and or in the Midwest in general. And we are lucky that and with our residencies being the same length, we are committing to going somewhere for 3 years as opposed to, you know, other residencies are 5 years or 7 years. And so those are all things that, you know, definitely we considered and talked about. But I think just the idea that it's an ongoing conversation, just as most relationships are ongoing conversations, that's how couples matching is too.
Agreed.
Wow, awesome. You both shared really valuable and helpful advice for students who may be considering mildly to seriously participating in the couples match. I am curious, I would love to hear your thoughts on if you think the factors you considered, the decision-making process that you both went through, do you think that's similar to what other couples go through?
Yeah, you know, I think in a large part, we kind of represent a sort of middle ground of relationship. You know, we are people who have been dating for an extended period of time, you know, a year and a half when we decided to couples match. And we both knew people who had been dating shorter and people who were married. So kind of on either ends of the relationship spectrum, so to speak. And I think that there are different things you weigh and maybe different tactics you take throughout the couples match, depending on which side of, you know, that spectrum you're on. You know, for instance, you know, if you're married or something and you're going through the couples match, you know, especially if you're going into a longer residency, I think the idea of being apart for, you know, some extended period of time, at least 3 years for some residency, 7 years, it becomes really, you know, not feasible for a lot of ways. You know, it's hard for someone to be married for someone and be doing a long distance relationship for 7 years. So I think for them, you know, they obviously take care in their application list, deciding what schools they're going to apply to make sure that they have extra schools in certain locations. You know, so like if they're in Chicago, they would apply to the full list of Chicago schools to ensure that they would have options when the rank list time comes around for them to select to ensure that they'd be together. And then same thing on the other side for people who are maybe in less serious relationships, they maybe had a bit more freedom to kind of explore other places and, you know, and kind of make the decision about how they're going to do their rank list, you know, based on what interviews they got later on and kind of determine, okay, maybe we'll do our first five or first 10 or so together. And then we may be okay trying to do long distance and just kind of having more of that continued conversation we were talking about earlier about, you know, what they think they could tolerate as a couple and what they, you know, what they would be okay with.
Yeah. And I think we'll cover this more when we talk about, you know, forming or how you form a rank list as a couple. But those are definitely Adam's spot on that each couple is going to have different things that they're discussing, both when deciding to couples match and also deciding how to couples match, because there's a lot more flexibility in the process than people realize. You don't have to be at the same program, and the combinations you can rank, they can be same city, medium distance, long distance. You know, it's you decide what combinations you're okay with ranking as a couple, and that's going to look different for every couple. And I completely agree with Adam that we're probably pretty middle of the road, typical couple in terms of our relationship status going into couples match. But I will say that we were unique in the fact that we were applying to the same specialty with very similar ambitions and geographical preferences. I do think that a lot of couples are applying to drastically different specialties and have drastically different levels of, you know, competitiveness as candidates. Adam and I are pretty lucky. We're pretty similar competitiveness as candidates, pretty similar goals. Whereas other people have to navigate like, okay, one person maybe is applying to a much more competitive specialty and we really need to prioritize their match and I have to be okay with going anywhere, right? Those are conversations we actually had when Adam was considering applying to surgery, like, okay, he might have to apply to more programs, which means that me as an internal medicine resident or applicant would apply to more programs to hopefully get the same overlap as him, whereas a typical internal medicine resident doesn't have to apply to as many programs as a general surgery resident. So I think specialty and professional goal-wise, we were kind of lucky to be so overlapping, but those are definitely factors that a lot of couples consider in whether they're willing to do the couples match, because it can get kind of complicated if people are applying to, you know, specialties with less programs or less spots across the country, more competitive, things like that.
Yeah, when I was still thinking about doing general surgery, we had made like a preliminary kind of idea of where we're going to be applying to, and that list was much, much longer, honestly.
Well, it worked out really well for multiple reasons. Because as you mentioned, not all couples are as lucky per se in their compatibility or ease of logistics of going through the couples match. As you guys mentioned, you started talking about the possibility of couples matching in advance during third year, which typically is around the time that medical students start thinking about and deciding if they want to pursue away rotations. And the topic of away rotations could certainly be its own separate podcast. But for the purposes of this conversation, I'm curious how your joint decision to at least seriously consider couples matching at the time of M3 year may have affected your decision on whether or not to do away rotations and where to do away rotations.
Yeah, I think that is a great question for couples. So Adam and I didn't do away rotations with internal medicine. It's definitely not required. And for both of us, we actually decided internal medicine a little bit late. I mentioned I've always been gung-ho about internal medicine, but actually I've always been gung-ho about geriatrics, and I can do that through either family medicine or internal medicine. And I really thought I was going to do family medicine until kind of the last second when I switched to internal medicine. And so for that reason, I was late to the game with applying to away rotations, and I just decided since not a requirement and I wanted to stay in the Chicagoland area where I already am, just not to do away rotations. And then Adam was considering Gen Surge versus IM for a long time, and then ultimately decided on IM and then kind of was just late to applying to away rotations. So we didn't, neither of us applied to away rotations. But I can tell you that the typical advice for couples, especially if you want to be in a geographical area that is not where you currently are, is to try to do an away rotation at the same institution. I know a lot of couples that have done this and have had success matching at that institution. I also know that it's very typical for couples, especially if they're not at the same medical school, to do away rotations at each other's medical school. One, because if you're a long distance couple, that's great. You get to spend time with each other. You already have a place to stay. But two, because obviously each person has connections within their own medical school, and it's great to, you know, bring your partner in and help them build connections within that same network that you have. So I think those are kind of the two things that we hear from a lot of couples that they do, is either away rotations together or away rotations at the partner's school. So if we had decided a little bit earlier, that's definitely what we would have done. But I guess it worked out for us without having done away rotations at all. So,
yeah, I completely agree with what Hannah said. Yeah, it took me a minute to decide and like fully commit to internal medicine, a little bit late for me to kind of start doing away rotations. But if I would have decided earlier, I think I would have been more open to it. I think we probably would have had deeper discussions about, you know, where we would do it and everything. I think Hannah, you know, makes a great point. I think unless you know you have massive gaps, you know, in the clinical setting or something, for IM, I think an away rotation usually is helpful, you know, getting your name known amongst the program and getting to know the people. But it's also helpful, I think, as an applicant to see if you like the program as well. You know, I think it's oftentimes, you know, people see it only as an audition for the program to see, you know, if to try to curry favor with them and show that you have a lot of skills and can be a useful and helpful resident to them. But I think it's also helpful to see, you know, yeah, how you would vibe with the program as an applicant and see if you would like it as well. So yeah, we were decided a little bit late, but I think if we had maybe decided earlier, it would have been helpful to maybe see some other programs and, you know, who knows, it may have affected our rank list, but, you know, I think we both ended up very happy. So.
Yeah, great. Similar to that question, I am curious about your decision-making process about which programs to apply to and which programs to signal. Just a bit of background for our listeners who may not know, internal medicine residency applicants, at least this past year, were given 7 signals. And signals are a way to communicate to a program that you are highly interested in that program and would be extremely excited and thankful for obtaining an interview at that program. So with that in mind, yeah, if you could speak to your experience with programs and signaling.
Yeah, for sure. In terms of applying to programs, every couple I know applied to more programs because they were couples matching. So for example, the, you know, kind of number guideline that we were given in terms of applying to internal medicine programs based on our competitiveness and the competitiveness on the field was probably like somewhere 15 to 25 range. And we ended up applying to closer to 40 programs. And that's just because you don't know exactly where you're going to be able to get interviews, and you want to make sure that you're applying to enough programs that you'll have overlap with your partner, because we didn't get all the same interviews. Like I said, being similar applicants in the same field, we had really great overlap, but we didn't want to, you know, regret not applying to enough programs. And also with couples, obviously, it's great being at the same program, but the main concern is being in the same city, not the same program. And so if we were applying to one program in the city, we applied to all the programs in the city just to maximize our chances of, you know, for example, there's like 5 major academic centers in Chicago, but beyond that, there are a bunch of great community programs in the city. And if one of us had gotten an interview at our dream program in Chicago and the other person didn't get one of those academic centers, maybe we still wanted to prioritize staying in Chicago. And for example, for me with geriatrics, that can look great in a community setting. So I applied to a couple of community programs that I thought were strong community programs in the Chicagoland area, just on the off chance that, for example, like Adam would have interviews at academic centers and I wouldn't, but it still met my career goals to be at those community programs. And so we applied to those programs, if that makes sense. I don't think it's worth applying to programs that either would not meet your career goals. For example, if you really want to do a specialty that this program doesn't have, like within internal medicine, there's a lot of subspecialties, right? If they don't have any geriatrics, maybe for me, I wouldn't apply there. Or if they've never matched anybody into cardiology ever, maybe Adam would be less eager to apply or interview there. I don't think it's worth applying to programs that don't match your professional goals. And I also don't think it's worth applying to programs that you would absolutely never move to or consider. But I do think when you're applying with a partner, you would get to bring that partner with you theoretically. And so I think it opened up a lot more of the map than if we had been applying alone, because I knew that I would be going with a buddy if we went, you know, somewhere kind of far away from home. So I think every couple pretty much without fail applies to more programs than they would if they were not applying as a couple. And then in regards to where to signal, do you want to cover this one, Adam?
No, I mean, my thoughts on the signaling as a whole. Again, I think if for us, you know, we represent one couple and one idea. So we, again, like Hannah's been saying, we are, you know, a similar applicants going into the same field with the same number of signals, obviously. So, you know, we ended up signaling the same schools because, you know, we thought we both had good shots at, you know, that being getting interviews there and having those like really, you know, weigh in on the decision to give us an interview. But I guess we also know other couples who did their kind of signaling preferentially, like Hannah was saying, to make sure that they had interviews in certain cities or certain locations next to each other. So, you know, I think a common signaling strategy is to kind of do maybe a couple of reach schools and then a couple of safety schools kind of things, or schools that you think, you know, maybe, you know, in or below your competitiveness level. And so I think for some other couples, maybe people who are going into different specialties, they would maybe signal a school that wasn't their perfect program in the sense of everything that the program offers, but it is in the same city as their partner, just to give them, you know, maybe the confident option when the rank order list time comes around, to know that they'll have at least these two schools together. So it's kind of another bonus you can throw on.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that it's the signals are new, and so everyone's always kind of wondering if there's a strategy. But in general, the best advice in regards to signal, whether you're a couple or not, and whatever field you're in, is signal where you genuinely want to go. Those signals are supposed to signify, like you said earlier, that you're really excited about this program and that is where you want to go. And obviously, we had a lot of overlap with our signals, and we didn't, for example, strategically signal 14 different programs because the 7 programs that we signaled, we both genuinely were most excited about. But there was a moment that we were like, oh, like, should Adam signal one program within the city and I signal the other program within a city? That way, you know, we're more likely to get an interview and then we can advocate for our partners. But no, that's kind of, it becomes kind of like trying to create this complicated strategy or game. And that's not really what signals are for. They're really just to say, hey, I'm excited. We're very happy with the programs we chose to signal, and those frankly ended up being the programs that we ranked the highest. And so it definitely held true that these are the programs we were most excited about. So
great. So we've talked a lot about the many factors and decision-making processes that occur leading up to submitting one's ERAS application. And then once your ERAS applications are submitted, there are interviews and ultimately the rank list process, which we'll discuss further later. Can you explain what it was actually like to go through the couples match over those many months of anxiously sitting by your email, hoping that you and your partner get good news, and then going on these interviews and just dealing with the day-to-day experience of what is this couples match?
Yeah, I mean, I think the entire match, residency interview, residency application, all of this whole process is stressful, whether you're going through it alone or with anybody. I think, you know, I mean, I guess I'm biased, but I think when you're in a relationship, you know, victories are sweetened and defeats are softened a little bit, you know, when you have a good partner by your side. But the whole process requires a degree of candidness, I think, that is difficult to go through without. Yeah, it requires communication through this all and an ongoing discussion, kind of like we were talking about at the beginning, where, you know, you're continually updating each other on how you're feeling about your applications, how you're feeling about the interviews you've gotten. I think just maintaining a solid, you know, unified front that is kind of confronting this interview process together was important for us. You know, when she got an interview at a place, you're always proud of her, you're always happy for her, and she was always happy for me when I got one and everything. You know, it's easy to get jealous in this process. I think sometimes you see other people doing things and hearing all these things. And I think just having a very open, communicative, candid relationship was the most important general thing about the process, having interviews come in and doing the interviews and talking about how they went and everything. So it's stressful, no doubt, but I think that goes a long way.
I completely agree. I'm honestly proud of us because I think we handled it really well together as a team. And I think that this whole process can be very isolating. You know, everyone's applying to different fields, everyone's different levels of competitiveness, everyone's getting different numbers of interviews and at different times. You know, some people's inboxes are flooded right away and some people have to wait a while before the interviews start trickling in. But I think going through it with a couple was great because we were always talking about it. You know, we had no choice but to be blatantly honest and open with each other. And it kind of made the process feel less isolating. And I, like I said earlier, we were fortunate applying to the same field and applying to the same programs that a lot of our interview invites we were getting at the same time. But even when one of us got one and the other one didn't, it kind of softened the blow because we were able to say, oh, like, we're going to advocate for you to get one now. Or, for example, kind of just an anecdote that I think describes it well is, there was a program that we both signaled that I got an interview at that Adam didn't get an interview at. And at first he was like, oh, are you disappointed in me that I didn't get an interview there? And I said, no, I'm disappointed in the program for not seeing what I see in you. You're a stellar candidate and you deserve an interview there. You know, you have to be a team like that. You can't, it's easy to, you know, get jealous or compare yourself and like feel like you're either letting somebody down or holding somebody back. We talked about it a million times that our number one program was the program where we could be together, right? And so if a program didn't like one of us, well, then we didn't like that program, because why would you see what an incredible position my partner is going to be? And so kind of like maintaining that unified front and being genuinely excited and happy for each other when we got interviews and always having each other's backs, to us, made the process honestly so much less isolating than if we were going through it alone. Like, I'm so glad that every time I got an interview, Adam was the first person I texted or called, and often he got the same interview at the same time. So we got to celebrate in that together and be really open about it. And that was honestly, it was just so much better doing it together.
Yeah, I agree. I think, or just to round it out, but I think Hannah, like what she said at the beginning, which is a lot of the interviews actually came in at the same time for us, you know, so we kind of got to celebrate a lot of those together. And then the ones that didn't, we just kind of held our breath, or the other person held their breath for to see if they'd get it there eventually. But I think that they review a lot of the applications together, so we kind of got to celebrate a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that's partially because we marked couples matching on our application. And then there were some schools that when they invite you for an interview, they'll have a survey. And sometimes part of that survey is, if you have a partner that's couples matching, who are they? And so sometimes I felt like, actually at least one school, I filled that out and like, boom, Adam got an interview immediately. But then the other kind of added perk benefit of couples matching is it's very standard practice that if one of you gets an interview and the other one doesn't, you email the program director and say, so you always email your own program director. So Adam and I have the same program director because we're in the same program. But if we were in different specialties, let's say he was doing pediatrics, I would have emailed the internal medicine program director and he would have emailed the pediatrics program director. And you just say, hey, my partner got a interview here and we are thrilled about the prospect of coming to XYZ town that your program is in. But I haven't received an interview yet. I'd love to, you know, restate my interest, especially more so now that my partner has an interview there. And that actually often works. I mean, sometimes they're going to give you an interview anyways, and they just kind of pull your application and look at it a little bit quicker. And then it definitely worked a couple times for us. And I know it's worked for people in the past that programs that they even matched at, that one partner hadn't received an interview at and the other one did. And then they reached out and said, hey, like, in case it wasn't clear, I want to come here because my partner already interviewed there and she loved it. And then that helped them secure an interview and they ended up matching there. So that's very standard practice. And it kind of gives you a reason to kind of knock on the program's door and say, hey, pay attention to me. So that can kind of actually help you secure interviews. It's kind of a perk of couples matching.
Yeah. I think, sorry, Emily, if you were going to ask this question later, but along the lines of like communication in terms of trying to secure an interview for your partner, we did have to do it. And sometimes they would respond, you know, immediately and be like, oh, sorry, we just missed that. You know, let me review it now, blah, blah, blah. And then they would, you know, get back to us fairly quickly. Other programs, it took months. I mean, I remember there was one where we did that similar scenario where we sent an email and then it wasn't until maybe 3 months later that they finally got back to us and were like, okay, here's an interview. So, you know, it's not always immediate. I think that the risk of doing that is so low and the, you know, the benefit is a lot higher. And I think it's worth it to do it if you're really interested in that program.
Awesome. Yeah. I really just loved hearing you both explain how supportive and patient you were with each other throughout the process. I think, Hannah, the anecdotal story you gave was so meaningful and speaks volumes to not only how a partner can be supportive to their significant other in the process, but also the importance of doing so. I could just tell from Adam's response and facial reactions, which our listeners don't have the privilege of seeing through this audio podcast, how happy he was to hear that story. So I can only imagine how happy he was in that moment. And as you explained, Hannah, going through the application process to residency is very potentially isolating and without a doubt stressful. And so I almost felt like jealous hearing you guys explain your experiences having each other
Thank you. Yeah, I totally agree. Adam and I have had a wonderful experience couples matching, and it only made us closer as a couple, truly. I don't want to understate some of the challenges of couples matching because, like I said, we were so fortunate that we had such great overlap with interviews and things like that. And I know that that is a huge privilege that not everyone experiences. Not only being in a couple, but some people don't get the interviews that they really want and really deserve. They just don't get noticed. They don't get that privilege. And so I do want to state that we are aware of how lucky and privileged we are for all this. And I think being able to experience with each other is just another level of that privilege. Having a partner that so intimately understands what you're going through and can share every moment with you just makes, for us, made the process so much sweeter.
Totally agree. I mean, yeah, I guess, you don't want to step on anyone's toes throughout this whole process. I think it's understandable, and you don't want to appear like you're bragging or appear like you're hurt about certain things to other people. And that's like an understandable and justifiable position to have. And just having the ability to talk things through with someone who really gets it in the moment and the exact scenarios of the interview process is, it's helpful and de-stressing in a lot of ways. It's cathartic to be able to tell these people these things. And so, yeah, it is the there's things wrong with the match, but I think this part of it really is, it is a privilege.
Awesome. Since you both applied to internal medicine, did you ever end up attending the same interview days? And if you were given the option of both interviewing on the same day from that list of dates, did you try to do this? And why or why not?
Yeah, we actually interviewed together a lot and it was great for the same reasons that we already described. Being able to go through it with somebody, logging on at the same time, having the same schedule, debriefing afterwards, being able to talk about the details of the program, was fantastic. So whenever we could, we tried to schedule them together. It definitely wasn't a mandatory thing for us. If somebody didn't schedule theirs right away or couldn't because of another commitment, do it on the same day. It wasn't a mandatory thing. But there was also one situation where I was going to interview in October and Adam wasn't going to be able to interview until January. And so we went ahead and reached out to the program and said, hey, could we interview on the same day? Because we really, want to consider this program as a unit. And they went ahead and scheduled him on the same day as me. So that was definitely a huge privilege. And then for internal medicine, all of our interviews were virtual, but for specialties where you are traveling to go see the program, I think it's an even bigger deal to be able to interview on the same day if possible. And I know that some couples that had some in-person interviews did reach out to programs to try and be able to go together because then you're traveling with somebody instead of traveling alone. And you obviously want to evaluate the city and the program as a unit. And so if you're actually going to spend the money to go and travel somewhere, it's kind of an even bigger impetus to ask for having the same interview day. The only reason I can think of not having the same interview day is if one partner is like very anxious when it comes to interviews. Sometimes it might be helpful to have kind of one partner go first and scope out the program and scope out the interview, but we never did that. So
Yeah, I agree. I think doing it on the same day has a lot of advantages to it. I think, I don't know if you guys agree with this, but especially with the Zoom interviews, I think a lot of interview days can kind of blend together when you're going over your rank list towards the end of the year. And so being able to, I mean, we kind of made it a point that after every interview, we would jot down our favorite things, things we were concerned about, advantages, disadvantages, all those things. And so being able to do that together with it both fresh in our mind, right after the interview, I think was helpful. So doing it on the same day was helpful when we could. But on the other hand, I think it wasn't like an absolute requirement or even really a requirement at all for us, because then, if we did it where someone had an interviews on different days, the first person could take their notes and then maybe kind of forget a little bit about it as they went through the interview process and interviewed at other places, and then get the refresher from the other person when they went through their interview. So it wasn't like an absolute requirement, but it was nice to have her there. I think it's a good moral support too throughout the day to give each other little winks and nods on Zoom and stuff.
yeah, no, that totally makes sense logistically and emotionally as well. I would like to now switch gears again to the end of the process, the light at the end of this tunnel, the rank order list. How did you guys approach the rank order list?
This was a huge question for me. I remember when we actually sat down to do it, I was just completely like, what? How do we even start? I think even for an individual making a rank order list, it can be so hard to actually put the programs in order. And obviously as a couple, you don't just rank each program, you rank combinations of programs. And each combination that you choose is what's acceptable to you as a couple, right? And so some couples will prioritize being at the same program, others in the same city, others in the same geographical region. And you can rank, so you can rank as many programs as you interviewed at. This is for all applicants. You pay a fee over 20 programs. And then you can rank up to 300 ranks. And so for Adam and I, let's say we both applied at 20 programs, that would technically be 20 times 20 possible combinations that we could have. In fact, it'd actually be 21 times 21 because with the couples match, you're allowed to put in combinations where one partner matches and the other person doesn't. Typically, those would be at the end of your rank order list. And the idea is that, you know, if one of us goes unmatched, at least the other person would match and have a job, and the other person could try to either soap into a program near them or apply again the next year. And so there's kind of an endless amount of possibilities when it comes to the rank order list. And I'm actually going to send you a video, Emily, that's put out by the NRMP that I don't know if you could include in the show notes. I think it would be probably pretty helpful for people to understand how the couples matching algorithm works, because we can obviously explain it over and over, but I think having the official NRMP video, definitely we watched it and made it very clear to us that this is how the rank order list works. Because there's a lot of misconceptions about, like, oh, do you each put in your own list? And then if you're within a certain geographical region, it's a match or not. And that's not how it works at all. It's you put in each combination. So we put in like both of our first choices, and then like his first choice, my second choice, and then my first choice, his second choice, but all based on geographic region. And then for us, since we're not married, we don't have kids, it wasn't, you know, make it or break it if we were in the same region, especially doing internal medicine, which is only a 3-year residency. We went ahead and ranked some medium distance combinations, and then we ranked some long distance combinations. And so that those are the combinations that were acceptable to us. You should never rank a combination that is not an acceptable outcome of the match. But we talked about it and we said, you know, I would rather have a job next year than have one of us match and not match and one of us not match. Obviously, we ranked all the combinations where we were in the same city first. But if we had to go, you know, an hour or two apart, it wouldn't be the end of the world. It's more important for us to match. But for other people, that's not the case. Like I said, if you're married and you have kids, you're not gonna split up the family, right? And that's definitely a situation. I know a few years back at Stritch, there was a couple that was married and had kids. And so for them, it's probably much more pressing that they match together or not at all, or at least one of them matches. So that's gonna be a decision based like for each couple. And it honestly, the way you come to that decision is just through conversation. You really have to hope for the best, but prepare for the worst and be very, very open and honest with each other about what is an okay outcome of the match and what is not an okay outcome with the match. And then, you know, decide how many combinations you're going to rank and if you're going to include ranks that are long distance or if you're going to include ranks that only one partner matches. We ended up including quite a few long distance ranks towards the bottom of our list, but we ended up not including any ranks that only one of us matched. First of all, because based on statistics and internal medicine, it seemed pretty unlikely that one of us wouldn't match. But second of all, because we decided if one of us doesn't match, we'll go through this whole thing again together next year instead of one person, you know, having to be behind and soap into a program like near the other person. So, but that's like a very, the couples match is very personalizable. You know, you could have like a few combinations at the beginning where you're in the same spot and then do completely long distance combinations for the rest of it. Or you could only do combinations where you're in the exact same program, let alone same city, right? So it's very up to the couples. I think that's kind of like a really giant overview, but I can also talk a little bit more about just some practical advice about how to make the rank order list, but I'll let Adam chime in if he has anything to add first.
No, I mean, I think you covered the big points. I think the most important thing that I'm sure people will have heard, before is that, you need to make your rank order list in the order that you are, most happy with, and happy being, a variety of things, the program that you're most happy with and the city that you're most happy to be at, are kind of the two big ones. So I think that one thing that comes up a lot with the couples match is, if there is maybe a scenario where, the couple can be in the same city, but maybe one person is at their dream program and the second person is at, a kind of middle of the road or lower down their list program. And they kind of have, it requires, again, like Hannah was saying, candid discussion about, or would we be happiest being together with me, maybe being at a program that isn't my ultimate favorite on just a pure ranking of the programs without taking any geographic preference, into account, versus ranking, maybe a medium distance option where people would be, where one, both partners would be at the program that they love, but maybe have to do, some version of medium to long distance for a couple of years. And the only way you can really come to the answer about which one is right for you is just through conversation and, openness with your partner. It's not an easy thing at all, I think. I think it's naive to think so, but when it comes time to it, just open communication is winds up being the most important thing. Look over your rank list and think both individually on your own time. Am I happy with this? Will I be happy with this order of things? Come match day, and not losing sight of that is important.
Yeah, I think something Adam stated that I think is just so true is that your rank list is not only what's the program you love the most. You have to take into account, location and connections. And that's definitely something that is so obviously you need to take into account as a couples match. But I think it's helpful to keep the perspective that everyone is doing that. I've talked to so many people that weren't couples matching that a huge part of their decision was, my partner outside of medicine has job prospects in this city and not in this city. And even though I love the program in city A, he wouldn't be happy there. So we're not going to rank that very highly, right? And so they're not couples matching, but they're still taking into account the needs and perspective of their partner. And then other people that maybe don't even have a partner, but are just considering their family's needs. Maybe their parents are older, or it's really important for them to be closer to home. They're willing to sacrifice, some things about a program. Maybe it's not the most prestigious program. It's not their favorite program ever. They have certain, they have 28-hour call shifts or something, and they never wanted to do that, but they're willing to do that in order to be closer to home. And so it's not a unique problem to couples match, but I definitely do think it is something that is made blatantly obvious when you're couples matching that you definitely have to talk about these things and take these things into account. And there is a lot of compromise, just like there is in any relationship, making any big decision, there is a lot of compromise that comes into play. I think it's helpful to remember, though, that it's not only people that are couples matching that are compromising. People going through the match on their own are still compromising with outside factors. So there is definitely points in our rank list where a program that we would have ranked very high individually did not meet the professional or personal goals of our partner. And so we ended up ranking that combination a lot lower. And so it just has to be an open conversation. And I never think you should sacrifice your own personal or professional goals, but there is flexibility, right? Like there are some programs that aren't your favorite programs, but they'll still get you to where you want to go. And to me, that would be a successful match, even if it's not my absolute number one dream program.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, this may not be specific to the couples match, but I think it it kind of gets at what we're talking about a little bit, which is the match isn't, you know, it's not just about match day. You know, I think a lot of people envision match day in their mind when they're thinking about the match and all of the really exciting reactions and everything about people have. But one thing I think that's helpful is it is to imagine yourself like opening the letter and being happy with what, you know, whatever is on it or being content with it. But I think sacrificing prestige or name of a place for geographic happiness is a really noble thing to do. And yeah, and I know people who, you know, they got these incredible interviews at all these incredible named places, but knew they wouldn't be happy there. And, you know, maybe they don't show off as much on match day and everything, but the amount of respect I hold for them in knowing what they want and being secure enough in themselves to go after that and know that they'll still, you know, get incredible training and everything is just really a noble quality and a difficult one to kind of come to grips with and things, but is an important part of the process, I think.
Yeah, your favorite program isn't just the program, it's also the place and the people, and that's the case for couples for sure, and it's the case for everyone going through the match. So I think it's always helpful to remember that perspective.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree, having just gone through this process myself. And I just want to share on a very similar note, a piece of advice, a piece of wisdom that I was given that I think is very relatable to the themes you both just discussed, which is that, as you mentioned, Adam, everyone, you know, hypes up match day, that one day, so much, and views match day as this like end all be all, this representation of all what's to come in the next 3 years, which is it extreme happiness? Because if you're extremely happy on match day, that's all you're going to be feeling for 3 years. If you're sad, that's all you're going to be feeling for 3 years, which is obviously not the case, but it's easy for everyone to think, oh, how I'm feeling on match day is like how my experience is going to be defined for the next 3 years, which obviously when saying and hearing that sounds like common sense, but it's so easy to not think that way when thinking about match day. And so with that in mind, a very wise mentor of mine soon before match day had told me that it's incredibly important to remember that going into match day and going into residency, you're already the person and the doctor that you're going to be. Residency is not going to alter your personality, your character. You're going into match day and residency already the wonderful person that you are with the established career goals and approaches to patient care that you already have. And a program will give you the necessary training and resources and opportunities to become a successfully trained internist, surgeon, you name it. But the end game, the end goal of residency, which is to be the sort of doctor that you've been training your whole professional life already to be, is not going to be determined or altered by the news you get on match day.
I completely agree. And I think having that mindset allowed us to go into match day knowing that we were going to be thrilled about our top 10 combinations. It's really easy to get excited about some of the interviews we got. You know, there were places that I interviewed that I never in a million years thought I would have the privilege of interviewing at. Huge names, amazing programs. I got to talk to amazing people that I genuinely love chatting with, whether or not I'm going to be at the same program with them in the future, right? And I think it's okay to, you know, celebrate that and be excited about it, but then also rank based on fit, not just on, you know, prestige and excitement, but based on genuine personality, career, location, fit. And then also, though, rank based on fit and then realize that there's a lot of programs that are going to fit, you know? There are a lot of programs that are going to help you reach your career goals that are wonderful programs that have wonderful people there waiting for you to meet. And so with that in mind, Adam and I genuinely, we loved so many programs that we were kind of like, you know, this is exciting. Any of these programs could end up being our new home, and that's super exciting. And the fact that we get to bring each other just makes it that much better because we're not going to go into it alone. Whereas I think if I was moving somewhere alone, I would have been a lot more scared going into match day, knowing that, you know, wherever you're going, you get to bring your partner. Definitely made us a lot more open to the fact that there are so many wonderful residency programs that would have been a genuine privilege to train at. So.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think, you know, it's like what Hannah was saying earlier, and this was for our relationship in specific, but, you know, our top programs were the programs where we were together. So we knew that if we got that on our card, at least we'd be at least happy on match day and our residency as a whole.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. I think now would be a great time to start wrapping up our conversation. And I would love to hear what your advice would be for medical student couples who are considering at any stage of the spectrum of consideration, as we've talked about throughout this conversation, in participating in the couples match.
Yeah, I mean, I think my advice might blend into just general relationship advice, so I'll try to keep it from that because, you know, I don't want to turn this into a relationship podcast. But I think, you know, the best advice I can give is that, you know, this is a challenge, you know, in a relationship. It's, you know, it's like the seniors in high school, you know, your high school girlfriend, you're going off to college, you know, type of vibe. And relationships will go through challenges. It's a part of being in a relationship. And, you know, I think one of the things, you know, about growing in a relationship and everything is going through those challenges together. And it requires openness, it requires candidness. And so my advice is to, you know, no matter how far along you are in your relationship, maybe use this opportunity, use this challenge as, you know, an opportunity to talk more and maybe achieve a level of openness and a level of communication that you maybe didn't achieve in your relationship before. But, you know, I think that the couples match is a privilege. You know, I think that, again, like I was saying earlier, there are problems with the match as a whole. It's a very stressful process. It puts a lot of hard dates that you have to look forward to and a lot of time just anxiously waiting. But the opportunity to kind of tilt and sway and try to affect this process so that you guys end up together is something that really is unique to medicine in the match process. And having the ability to do it is a privilege. And so if you're thinking about couples matching in the back of your mind somewhere, take this podcast as, you know, my sign to tell you to have the conversation. It's worth it. It's an incredible opportunity, truly. And just have a deep conversation about it, you know, open up a little bit.
I love that. That's great life advice, relationship, self, you name it, advice all in one.
I totally agree. Couldn't agree more. I know that when we started having the conversation about couples matching, I remember being like, this is so unfair. I've only been dating this guy for a year. He's lovely, but how am I supposed to, you know, state now today whether or not I want to tie my professional future to him? You know, that sounds so crazy. And I talked to a mentor that told me pretty much what Adam was just saying there, that said, you know, relationships will always affect your personal and professional development. And the fact that this has a hard deadline for these conversations kind of sometimes can help speed those conversations along. And you make these decisions consciously and together instead of silently just sliding into positions where you're sacrificing things without ever having the conversation. So I'm really thankful to the couples match for starting that conversation. And that would really be my advice to everybody that's even considering it, is have the conversation. You won't regret having the conversation. Some people decide that it is a fit for them. Some people decide it's not, but you should definitely have a conversation about it. And also, you know, couples matching successfully does not mean that your relationship is guaranteed for eternal success. and couples matching together does not mean your relationship is doomed. You know, I've heard so many stories of people that decided that at that time they weren't going to couples match, but ended up, you know, in the same geographical region and then ended up being able to stay together. And in their next step, they decided to, you know, couples match for fellowship and ended up, you know, getting married. And I've also heard the other side of the coin where people couples match successfully, but then a few years down the road realize that this isn't the relationship for them. But never regretted couples matching because that was a relationship that they wanted to preserve and work on at the time, right? So I think it's really just about being open to the conversation and open to the process. I would tell anybody that's considering it to really be open to it, look into it, realize how much flexibility there is, and also realize how much support there is. I know for me, I was worried at first, like, is this something people are going to look down upon? Is this going to make my chances of matching into residency more difficult? Is this binding? Am I going to be quote unquote trapped? And none of that is true. That's all just fear and anxiety talking. The couples match is very flexible and you can really, you know, use it to your advantage to make whatever is a successful match for you a reality. So I would say explore it and reach out to us if you have any questions. Reach out to us or other people that have couples matched. I know Adam and I reached out to people that had couples matched previously, and it was definitely a huge support system. And reached out to mentors that are familiar with the couples match. I will say that, you know, program directors are very familiar with it. I know a lot of program directors in our interviews were like, we love our couples. You know, you come in with a built-in support system. We're more than happy to make your vacations line up and put you on similar schedules, right? So there's a lot of people that are familiar with the couples match, love the couples match, have experienced the couples match that you can always go to for advice and support. So reach out early.
Thank you. And I'll be sure to include, as we discussed offline beforehand, your emails in the show notes for the episode so our listeners know where to reach you.
Great.
Well, thank you both, Adam and Hannah, so much for speaking with me today. I know I learned so much about the couples match, and I feel that I speak for all of our listeners who might be considering this now or in the future, that you both shared so much advice and wisdom. So thank you again.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us, Emily. We're so happy to share our experience. I hope it's helpful to others considering it.
Yeah, thanks, Emily. It's really an honor.
Thanks for listening to this episode. This wouldn't be possible without the support from our listeners. Please rate, review, and subscribe. We appreciate donations to help fund the production of this podcast. To support us, go to medicuspodcast.com, where you can additionally find show notes, links, and information about our guests. We are at Medicus Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. If you have any questions, comments, or episode suggestions, please submit them on our website. This podcast is intended for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine. No patient-doctor relation is formed, and the content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Views and opinions are their own and do not represent any organization.